The monks stripped me naked and poured cold water over my head, then brushed me vigorously with brushes made from boar's hair, then poured hot water on me, then scrubbed, then cold water, until I screamed for them to stop. At that point, they shaved my head, taking generous nicks out of my scalp as they did so, rinsed away the hair that stuck to my body, and handed me a fresh orange robe, a blanket, and a wooden rice bowl. Later, I was given a pair of slippers, woven from some sort of grass, and I made myself some socks from woven yak hair. But this was the measure of my wealth for 6 years. A robe, a blanket, a bowl, some slippers, and some socks. As monk number 8 led me to meet with Gaspar, I thought of my old friend Bartholomew, and how much he would have loved the idea of my newfound austerity. He often told of how his cynic patriarch Diogenes carried a bowl with him for years, but one day saw a man drinking from his cupped palm and declared, "I have been a fool, burdened all these years by the weight of a bowl when a perfectly good vessel lay at the end of my wrist." Yeah, well, that's all well and good for Diogenes, but when it was all I had, if anyone had tried to take my bowl, they would have lost a vessel at the end of their wrist. Gaspar sat on the floor in the same small room, eyes closed, hands folded on his knees before him. Joshua sat facing him in the same position. Number 8 monk bowed out of the room, and Gaspar opened his eyes.
"Sit," I did. "These are the 4 rules for which you may be expelled from the monastery. 1. A monk will have no sexual intercourse with anyone, even down to an animal."
Joshua looked at me and cringed, as if he expected me to say something that would anger Gaspar. I said, "Right, no intercourse."
2. A monk, whether in the monastery or in the village, shall take no thing that is not given. 3. If a monk should intentionally take the life of a human, or one like a human, either by his hand or by weapon, he will be expelled.
"One like a human?" I asked.
"You shall see," said Gaspar. 4. A monk who claims to have reached superhuman states, or claims to have attained the wisdom of the saints, having not done so, will be expelled. Do you understand these 4 rules?"
"Yes," I said. Joshua nodded.
"Understand that there are no mitigating circumstances. If you commit any of these offenses, as judged by the other monks, you must leave the monastery."
Again I said yes, and then Gaspar went into the 13 rules for which a monk could be suspended from the monastery for a fortnight. The first of these was the heartbreaker. No emission of semen except in a dream. And then the 90 offenses for which one would receive an unfavorable rebirth if the sins were not repented. These ranged from destroying any kind of vegetation or deliberately depriving an animal of life to sitting in the open with a woman or claiming to a layman to have superhuman powers, even if you had them. Overall, there was an extraordinary number of rules, over 100 on decorum, dozens for settling disputes, but remember, we were Jews, raised under the influence of the Pharisees, who judged virtually every event of day-to-day life against the law of Moses. And with Balthasar, we had studied Confucius, whose philosophy was little more than an extensive system of etiquette. I had no doubt Joshua could do this, and there was a chance I could handle it too, if Gaspar didn't use that bamboo rod too liberally, and if I could conjure enough wet dreams. Hey, I was 18 years old and had just lived 5 years in a fortress full of available concubines. I had a habit, okay?
"Monk number 22, Gaspar said to Joshua, "you shall begin by learning how to sit."
"I can sit," I said,
"and you, number 21, will shave the yak."
That's just an expression, right? It wasn't. A yak is an extremely large, extremely hairy, buffalo-like animal with dangerous-looking black horns. If you've ever seen a water buffalo, imagine it wearing a full body wig that drags the ground. Now, sprinkle it with musk, manure, and sour milk. You've got yourself a yak. In a cave-like stable, the monks kept 1 female yak, which they let out during the day to wander the mountain paths to graze. On what? I don't know. There didn't seem to be enough living plant life to support an animal of that size. The yak's shoulder was higher than my head. But there didn't seem to be enough plant life in all of Judea for a herd of goats either, and herding was one of the main occupations. What did I know? The yak provided just enough milk and cheese to remind the monks that they didn't get enough milk and cheese from one yak for 22 monks. The animal also provided a long, coarse wool, which needed to be harvested twice a year. This venerated duty, along with combing the crap and grass and burrs out of the wool, fell to me. There's not much to know about yaks beyond that, except for one important fact that Gaspar felt I needed to learn through practice. Yaks hate to be shaved. It fell to monks 8 and 7 to bandage me, set my broken legs and arm, and clean off the yak dung that had been so thoroughly stomped into my body. I would tell you the distinction of those two solemn students if I could think of any, but I can't. The goal of all of the monks was to let go of the ego, the self, and but for a few more lines on the faces of the older men, they looked alike, dressed alike, and behaved alike. I, on the other hand, was quite distinct from the others, despite my shaved head and saffron robe, as I had bandages over half of my body and 3 out of 4 limbs splinted with bamboo. After the yak disaster, Joshua waited until the middle of the night to crawl down the hall to my cell. The soft snores of monks filled the halls, and the soft turbulence of the bats that entered their cave through the monastery echoed off the stone walls like the death panting of epileptic shadows. "Does it hurt?" Joshua said. Sweat streamed from my face despite the chilly temperature. "I can hardly breathe." 7 and 8 had wrapped my broken ribs, but every breath was a knife in the side. Joshua put his hand on my forehead. "I'll be all right, Josh. You don't have to do that." "Why wouldn't I?" he said. "Keep your voice down." In seconds, my pain was gone and I could breathe again. Then I fell asleep or passed out from gratitude. I don't know which. When I awoke with the dawn, Joshua was still kneeling beside me, his hand still pressed against my forehead. He had fallen asleep there. I carried the combed yak wool to Gaspar, who was chanting in the great cavern temple. It amounted to a fairly large bundle, and I set it on the floor behind the monk and backed away.
"Wait,"
Gaspar said, holding a single finger in the air. He finished his chant, then turned to me.
"Ti,"
he said. He led, and I followed to the room where he had received Joshua and me when we had first arrived.
"Sit," he said. "Sit, don't wait."
I sat and watched him make a charcoal fire in a small stone brazier, using a bow and fire drill to start the flames, first in some dried moss, then blowing it onto the charcoal. "I invented a stick that makes fire instantly," I said. "I could teach." Gaspar glared at me and held up the finger again to poke my words out of the air.
"Sit," he said. "Don't talk. Don't wait."